You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell.
You've just been listening to the Hot Texas Swing Band with our good friend
Hot Texas.
And Hot Texas is what they've been playing. And we're so delighted to have you with us tonight for episode 153.
That's quite a few.
Yes. And if you're listening live, we're so delighted you're with us. If you're catching us later on the archive or on Podbean, thank you so much for joining us. Who's our special guest tonight?
Kathleen M. Rogers.
And here she is. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello, Bobby and Jim.
Oh, we're so happy to have you with us tonight. You know, we were trying to remember the last time, Kathleen, you were on, it was episode 50.
A couple of years ago. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you been doing this show that long?
Yeah. Yes, we have.
Oh, my goodness.
Kathleen, where are you joining us from tonight?
A suburb in Dallas-Fort Worth, up in North Texas.
All right. And we were noticing all your beautiful bookcases behind you. So let's see. You wrote all of those books and things, didn't
That's
you?
That's what you said.
I wrote a few on, let's see, one of these shelves. I can't quite, one of those. I wrote a few books in the middle section. But I'm not going to separate those. I like to be surrounded by other authors and author friends.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let's see. We have so much to talk about tonight. Oh, my gosh. All right. So first off, we're going to hold up the book that we're going to be talking about in greater depth this evening. We are so excited. This is the Llano County Mermaid Club. And yes, it's not quite, you can't get it in your hands quite yet.
Yeah.
Right, Kathleen, when's it coming?
Right, and here's a beautiful bookmark that University of New Mexico Press designed. Its
gorgeous.
Official release date is October 21st. It got pushed back a little.
Yeah,
I am going to be doing some events before that hopefully some early copies will be there, but October 21st this year.
Yeah.
Really good.
Very exciting. It's a gorgeous design. This book, you'll just want to dive right into it. It's just a fabulous, fabulous design and a terrific read. And let's see, Jim. Well, you know, before we move into just your bio, Kathleen, you were with us. We just said episode 50, and we talked about this great book. Then do you want to just take a moment and tell us a little bit about the Flying Cutter books?
Oh, my gosh. The Flying Cutter books came out 5 years ago, June 2nd, 2020. It's set in New Mexico, and it's set against the backdrop of a certain election back in 2016. But at the heart of the story is a Gold Star family, the Cutter Bucks, and their patriarch, Major Shep Cutter Buck, has been missing in action in Vietnam since 1972.
Yeah, and this is a fabulous read to all of you that are listening or watching. If you haven't read this book, actually everything Kathleen has written, you need them. But this just touched our hearts so greatly when we got to read this one. Okay, Jim, turning it over
bio
to you.
Time.
Yeah, bio time.
All right. Kathleen M. Rogers is a novelist and a former contributor to Family Circle Magazine and Military Times. She specializes in contemporary fiction with an emphasis on family dynamics, friendship, social issues, mystery, magical realism, and a constant search for home. Her fifth novel, The Orlando County Mermaid Club, is coming from the University of New Mexico Press. It is represented by Tracy Crowe Literary Agency. A native of Clovis, New Mexico, Kathleen resides in North Texas and is working on her sixth novel. Welcome, Kathleen.
Thank you, Jim.
And we can't wait for that one.
You know, we were talking the other night. We were wondering, was there something maybe funny or humorous or secretive in your background I didn't include in your novel that you want to talk about?
Something humorous?
Well, something
that you find
in your bio, you know, something we wouldn't know from researching you.
Okay. No, it's okay. I thought about this earlier. I'm almost 67. And yes, I still hold my nose before I jump in a swimming pool. And if you don't believe me, ask my two grandsons.
Okay, let's go.
You do cannonballs when you jump in?
Oh, not with these knees today. But I have jumped in pajamas a couple of months ago, and my six-year-old grandson cracked up. Oh, he cracked up. So, yeah. That's
how
not
fun.
In my official bio.
We love that.
We have to give you A for effort on that, though.
Yeah, that's fun. That's fun. Let's see. Do you want to talk a little bit about her writing background? You want to ask a little bit about kind of how she got?
Yeah, kind of bring us up to date again. We know that... You know, I was looking at their last show, and you had mentioned you started out as a cub reporter. What was that about?
So I started taking my writing seriously in high school. And when I was 19, I was taking college classes at night, working full time in the day as a cub reporter at the Clovis News Journal in Clovis, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And you don't hear the term too much anymore, probably, but anybody of a certain age, cub reporter meant you were a young pup.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as we get into the book, and we'll talk about Marigold later on in greater detail, but she has a little bit of that in her past too, doesn't she? Yes. Well, they say write what you know.
You know, you mentioned cub reporter would mean obviously talking about somebody new on a job. Did you get much respect or in that position, or did you have to go a few months before they kind of like, okay,
well,
you're all right?
The managing editor told me at my interview he didn't have any openings, but somehow 2 hours later and a lot of me talking, and I took some kind of test, and he hired me, and I started out writing headlines, first birthdays, and obituaries. And a week later, he let me write a feature story.
Oh, my gosh.
Very good.
Well, he saw the talent, obviously. do you like to write in a certain, do you have a favorite place you like to write in?
I've been in this home 33 years. This, my office that I share with my hubby, it used to be the go-to place when I was raising my two sons. Like, I would come in here, close that French door, and hide. Nowadays, my oldest son just turned 40. Tom and one dog and me. And sometimes I'll come in here, pick up my laptop, and I have ended up back at the kitchen table. The place I couldn't years ago. Well, one of these days I'm going to have my own studio, and I have a built-in desk that some of my money from Family Circle helped pay for, my built-in bookshelves. There's something about now that my children are grown and I'm older. I'm ended up back in the kitchen, but that's okay. It's the heart of my home.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter where I write. And I can write longhand. I can write on my notes on my iPhone. I have scribbled notes on receipts back in the old days, any piece of paper, napkins, toilet paper. Yes, I've done that. I think I used my own skin one time, but
somebody else did that one time. I can't remember who that was.
Well, I mean, you got phone numbers that way, honey. Get phone numbers that
way? I was writing that. I couldn't read them then.
Oh my goodness. And do you know, your books are just, music is always a big part of the characters' lives in your books. So do you need to write in silence, or do you turn something on to help you get in the mood? Talk a little bit about you and music.
All over the place. I've done everything. Sometimes I'll write without music on. I've written with kids in the background. I've written in the same room where they're watching movies, you know, years ago, and I'm scribbling. But with the music, what happens is when I'm writing and I'm writing in a certain era and I'm trying to get that tone or that feel of the time, it's just like smells. Music is just like that. It's the sensory. And then if I realize a song comes to me and I can find it, I play it over and over and over while I'm writing the scene.
While you're writing the scene. Oh, I love that. Well, we are going to take a very short break. This is our first one. We have so much to talk about. And let's see when we, okay, we're going to take our first break. I'm so excited. I can't even focus, Kathleen, on what I need to be doing. We're going to hear from our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. Are you a writer? Maybe you'd like to increase your social media presence, refresh your website, or like we just did, launch a website or even a landing page. Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison are standing by to assist you. And here's news about an exciting new feature that they're offering authors. And when we come back, we have a surprise. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page starting at $369. Bluebookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Me tonight at the Sands Motel, out on the edge of town. The sign's missing the end if you come from the east, and the building's a little run down. I've brought along some of.
Welcome back to Ron Room with the Writer. You just been listening to the Sands Motel where friend Carrie Gumbacher. This one super song.
Uh-huh. It's the title track to the album of Carrie's, of course, Sands Motel. And Kathleen, we were just talking about music. And when I read a sequence that happens at the Sands Motel, this song just bang came right into my mind, and I had to put it on and just close my eyes and listen and then go back and reread that scene. So, Carrie, thank you for allowing us to play a little bit of that wonderful piece of music.
I love that song.
Yeah, it's a great song. And speaking of the Sands Motel, how does that fit in with your book?
Thank you. If I had known about Carrie's song, I would have played that over and over every time the book set at the Sands. I don't want to say too much and give away any spoilers for the story, but the Sands Motel is an old motor lodge there on the outskirts of Sand Hill, New Mexico, in eastern New Mexico. And Marigold in 2017, she's a ghostwriter. She goes back, she comes back into town from Albuquerque, where she lives, and she checks in to the Sands Motel for a reason. And probably not like some people might think, oh, she's going back to a motel, you know, old times sake there. It has to do with the motel swimming pool that was there when Marigold, her two sisters, and two best friends were young.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then she stays there for a period of time, and we're with her during that time. We hear it's Marigold's voice that's telling the story. Yes. And so we go back and forth to her room at the Sands Motel, don't we?
And in my mind, when I was experiencing, or when I was writing Marigold there, I just like put myself there, like in this imaginative place, and just tried to pretend what would it be like, you know, to come back as an adult, to go to this motor court, motor lodge, and pull in. And it's like, what happened to the swimming pool? That was the magic when they were kids.
Right. That's right. That's right.
You know, you write the story, you know, in two time periods, and you go back and forth. And actually, I did a pretty good job of keeping up when you on back and forth. Was that hard to do? Was that hard to write it that way?
Almost every one of my stories has some kind of dual timeline, because that's how stories come to me. Mm-hmm. When I think of stories, I think of memories. And you know, when we think of memories in our lives, we don't start at the beginning of our very first memory every day and go through there. We hop in. We're plugged into 1960, 1978, 1972, driving down this blacktop road. That's how the stories come to me. So what I did try to do, and I've learned this over the years, I try to orient the reader right off in the opening of each chapter. I usually try to orient them with the date, kind of what time of year, the season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's very helpful. Yeah. And sometimes a chapter, as we noticed, would follow each other fairly quickly. And others, you might have a couple, you know, some years in between.
Yes.
And sometimes we might be in a year. Let's say we might be in 1977. But then the next chapter, we might be in 1976. So it was, you know, it was that made it also very interesting, sort of how you quilted this story together.
Right.
In such a just, you know, Kathleen, okay, I'm just going to gush. Okay, I'm going to gush and then you can gush. Okay, so this book, this story is magic in prose. And there are, as I read, I couldn't help it. I kept copying and pasting whole paragraphs and banter back and forth, dialogue into another document, because I didn't want to forget the power of the language as it unrolls in the story. And there are quite a few characters, and you find their voices. I'm always amazed when an author has really a big cast of characters, but we get to know them intimately, and we don't need to have the name in front. They speak, and we know, oh, that's got to be Melody, or that's got to be Carmen, or that's got to be, and then we go, oh, I was right. When the story's just magic.
When the character, thank you so much, Bobby Jean. I tell you, that just makes my heart flutter. The characters have to come to me and feel real, and I have to live in the story. That's what it is exhausting to write fiction, or for me. Yes, there's times I'm exhilarated, times I'm inspired, times I'm laughing, sometimes I'm crying, but when I'm on a roll, I'm tired. I want the characters to feel so real that they feel like real people to me. as I'm writing it, or even years later, if I think back about a story, sometimes I'm like, wait, did that really happen? Or was that,
yeah,
or is that my memory? Yeah.
And you were commenting today on something that you really, really enjoyed.
Well, there's a couple of things.
Well, you can.
I thought maybe I'd start with the power of imagination. Could you talk to us a little bit about mermaids?
Okay. Carefully. We don't want to give anything away. When I was writing this, I grew up in the land of enchantment, New Mexico, USA, for anyone that was worried. It's part of the United States. Trust me, as a kid.
Yes.
New Mexico is a landlocked state. We are not surrounded by any body of water. So that became one of the themes in the story. And my young girls, there are five young girls in the story, they long to see the ocean. They long to see the sea. Mermaids, of course, where do mermaids live? In the ocean, in the sea. What in the world are mermaids doing on the cover of my book, A Beautiful Mermaid Tales, by a senior designer at UNM Press? It's an original illustration, the cover is. It became something that Letty Hubbard, Letty is the mother of Clover, Marigold, and Tansy. And Letty is always, she's making do with what little she has as she's raising her daughters. And some of that is storytelling. Some of that is, we all have done it if we're parents or when we're little kids and we see a hill over here, but that could be a giant's belly over there as we're driving down the road. Or that could be, it's anything. It's our imaginations. And just because we grow up and become adults, we're still, if we allow ourselves, I'm still 5 years old. Uh-huh. I may not look five. And trust me, I can be 6 and a half. Just ask my grandson, Colton. I can't have his knees. It takes me a while. But the imagination, magic, believing that there's something else that we maybe can't see. So yeah. The mermaids are very symbolic, mermaid mythology. Into the story.
Well, as you said, we're landlocked, and yet these girls just want water. It rains and they can't wait to get out. It blizzards, occasional blizzard. They can't wait to get out. The draw of the opportunity to be in a community pool. Oh my goodness. That's like going, you know, to Disneyland, for these girls. And they're just so hungry for water. They're so thirsty for water. And we have great adventures with them. So you need to read the book to find out the magical things that happen anytime they're around water. The scenes that you write are just, it makes me want to go out in this dry, you know, hot Albuquerque and turn that faucet on back there and get in when I water the plants. Get in there with that water. And you had another thing.
Well, you know, I get a couple. You touched on earlier dreams, and we talked about your dreams being given up, you know, as life goes on. And goals. And it's interesting you bring out that these girls at a young age, they have their own dreams and goals.
Yeah.
And not all of them, but a couple of them are very definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, and mom and dad, Letty and Dorian, we discover. The other thing is you're so deft at the way you tell us the story. You don't sort of dump everything. You know, you roll it out in just beautiful puzzle pieces that we, the reader, go, oh, that was mentioned. Oh. And so we kind of learned that they both had dreams and the family, you know, came first. And so they both did what they needed to do for the sake of the family at that point in their lives, you know. Another thing you wanted to mention about the dialogue.
Well, yeah, but we're gonna give Kathleen a chance to talk.
Oh, I know.
We're talking to her.
Because we're gushing.
Kathleen, we know you did a pretty good job with dialogue. But as I mentioned to Bobby earlier, what was the problem?
I don't know. I'm hearing a kind of a
echo.
Yeah, but I don't know why. Everything looks good on our end. Are you hearing that too, Kathleen?
No.
Okay. Well, we're just gonna keep going.
We'll keep moving. You know, I thought you did a nice job capturing dialogue among the girls, particularly when they're taking the short trips in the car. We even have, the father and the mother in the front seat and the girls in the back. Then we'd have a trip where we just have the mother driving, the father's not there, and then we have a time where the father's driving and the mother's not there. And I thought you captured the essence of how those conversations might go. Some thoughts on that?
Oh, thank you. That's really good point. You know, the dynamic changes. If mama's driving in the station wagon in the 60s, that might be different than if dad's driving the three sisters and two best friends somewhere. You know, does dad turn on the AC back in those days? Is he tight? Is he always watching money? Dialogue. I will tell you, it took me years. I had an editor in New York City back in the 90s who saw my first novel. They didn't publish it, but she helped me, gave me some pointers. And so when I write, I do a lot of talking out loud. I talk into a recorder. I holler at Tom somewhere in the house, "Hey, Tom, which one sounds better?" You know, and give him different versions. That's the other key. If there's any writers out there, when you're writing, no matter if you're writing dialogue, whatever you're writing, read your work out loud, even if you hate the sound of your own voice, because reading our work out loud is where we catch things, or when we know it flows, then we're not stumbling over words.
Yeah. We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to just keep talking like we are. We may delve a little bit more into some of the specific characters, but we are going to just take this very quick break. And I have to remember what we're doing with it. Oh, this is our break about our page on bookshop.org, where you can find many of the books of the authors that appear here, including Kathleen M. Rogers, the Llano County Mermaid. His club is there for you to order. And we have another surprise when we come back. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com. Find books and CDs on the menu. Choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to My Room of the Writer. We're talking to Kathleen Rogers on "And That Was a Typewriter Song." In case you haven't heard that, like, where does that come from?
Well, Kathleen brings it up in the story, and I think you have a quote.
I do have a quote.
Yeah, you're going to actually share the quote that goes along with the music.
Okay. Mama, we call her Letty. The mother, she's in Pete's pawn shop, and she's looking at a Remington 5 typewriter. I can imagine this is an old style. And Pete says, "Go ahead and try it out." Pete said, "I give my mama some room." And he says, "You ever heard the typewriter song? I think it came out in the 50s. You can still catch it on the radio once in a while, and a blue moon." Yeah, and he says, "Yep, it's a snappy tune, all right. Makes you want to get up and dance." And then Mama grinned and limbered her fingers. Then placing them on the keys, she bowed her head and began to type. With each clickety-clack, a steady stream of tears rolled down Mama's cheeks. At the point in the part of the story, yeah.
It's so great. We just had to, you mentioned, again, there's a playlist that runs through this book. And I started writing down book titles because there's a reading list if you read this book. And I started writing down song titles and began to in my iTunes library, I began to go in and create a playlist of the music. And when I pulled this up and listened, I thought, what could be more appropriate for this literary gem that you're giving us, the character of Letty, and typing a story on a typewriter? What could be better?
And when Pete, the pawn shop owner, asked her, you know, the typewriter song, I'll be honest, when I remembered it from a long time ago, and I found it and I played it that over and over as I wrote. And then I'd get up and dance around, and it just makes you want to dance.
Yeah. Yeah. So since we're talking about Letty right now, she's just, why don't you tell us a little bit. Tell us something about Letty.
Okay. Letty Hubbard. Letty Hubbard, when the story, when she's first introduced, she's a young mom. She has a 5-year-old daughter, a 4-year-old daughter, and a brand new infant baby daughter. And her husband is Dorian. Their last name's Hubbard. And Letty didn't have certain opportunities when she was younger, and she has dreams. And where she begins to explore those dreams is free to everyone, and it's called the public library. And in the novel, it's the Sand Hill Public Library. And Miss Mavis is, I never say she's a head librarian, I picture her as the head librarian. She befriends Letty and starts giving Letty, you know, titles. You might want to read this book and that book. And Letty takes the young girls to the library. And I would just like to say, for Letty Hubbard, the library is where she first started really getting her education.
Mm-hmm. Miss Mavis is just a wonderful, wonderful character. And there are many scenes at the library. And I love that you have kind of pulled that out. They even get their pictures taken the day they get their library cards. I think they're on the top of the stuff. So such a big thing for them. Again, we're talking about imagination and kind of being landlocked and, you know, not necessarily having a lot of disposable income. And here is where imagination flies. And also books that in the reading of them provide some counsel and some advice through the storylines. And you you give us, because we have young children and we have Letty and we have Grandma Dot. And so you provide, as the author, through these scenes with books, there is a reading list for kids. There's a reading list of classics, because that's what she's telling Letty to read. And then we learn that Dot loves the bestsellers, right?
Yes, those thick, back in the 70s, 80s, I think you can still get them, but thick, thick best-selling novels, paperbacks, and you could get them. You could get them in the grocery store,
right?
Like at the checkout.
Right. Yeah. And then Letty, as we said before, Marigold, we're really getting this story through Marigold, except Letty does something to tell the story too. What does she do?
Okay. So there are really two points of view in the novel, and Marigold is the narrator. The way you get Letty's point of view is when Letty gets that typewriter, she writes letters. And I don't want to say too much about who she writes to. I'll just say she writes to some authors. And I'll just, Letty pours her heart out to the authors and also to Miss Mavis, the librarian, who in Letty's mind is her friend.
Yeah. And we get to, you know, we get to read those letters. I mean, we're reading those letters like right after she's written them. We get to read them. And so we have that opportunity to hear her voice in such a lovely way. And she has that typewriter. What did she find to put that typewriter on, Kathleen?
Her desk was an old vanity table, kind of a, I wanted something to mirror like a kidney-shaped swimming pool. Maybe not quite kidney-shaped, but the old vanity tables, kind of spindly legs, wooden top, maybe a middle drawer. Not real sturdy, but it works.
Yeah.
You know, the letters went to several different authors. And my question to you was it difficult writing those letters for Letty?
Well, here's what I did, Jim. I decided to be authentic. I couldn't start really writing about other authors in their novels or giving it to my characters unless I'd actually read the books. Many of the books I'd read years ago, I reread them. Some books I read for the first time. And it's the books I picked. It's the authors who called to me. I'll just say a couple of names. Eudora Welty. She was from Mississippi. Grace Metalius. She wrote Kate Place. Kate Chopin. She wrote The Awakening. And that book came out in 1899. And Kate Chopin raised 6 children as a single mother.
Yeah. Well, and then we have Clover. Clover's one of the sisters. And what does she open as she's an adult? What does she do?
Clover opens a bookstore in Sand Hill, an Indian independent bookstore. And Clover's the oldest, then Marigold, then baby sister Tansy, then best friends Ruthie and Melody. But as an adult, Clover opened up this bookstore. And so in the novel, between the public library from the past and the indie bookstore in 2017, those became magic places for me through memory and through my characters. And when Marigold's back, when she goes back home in 2017 and she goes to her sister's bookstore, that also became a challenge of how to make it interesting, how to make it different, unique. And I'm hoping I did.
You did. It's the Sugar Beet Bakery and Books. And she also has a banner, like if banned books found here, or it's very clever. Mm-hmm. And so you're also bringing, you know, again, there are so many layers and so much, so I'll say just deftly woven in, subtly woven in, that I think this is a book you read more than once because you'll miss important things the first time through.
Thank you so much.
Let's, you know, go ahead.
Just one question?
We do have time for a question.
You only have one male character of importance in the book until the end, and we don't want to bring that one up. Dorian, the father, you know, he's really kind of a cad. And I got to thinking, I told Bobby earlier today, he's really kind of a kid to some degree, but, you know, he's got all those women around him. I thought maybe I better cut him a little slack.
he actually became one of my favorite characters because, he's kind of a cad at times. But don't we all know people like that, and we love him anyway.
Well, and we see him in a number of scenes where he is just lovable. I mean,
yeah,
the community pool scene. I mean, there's just some scenes and that the driving one time with the girls in the car. And, you know, he's just, you can just see they're having a wonderful time. And the daughters all, in the early years that we get to know them, they love being around him. You know, they're very
happy,
you know.
Handsome.
Daddy,
so
yeah,
handsome.
Yeah.
And he's always promising the moon, you know.
Now, I am now looking at time. You need to ask your favorite question, because we are talking characters. You have a favorite question you like to ask. What is it?
Yeah, we know you have some control on these folks, usually, mostly. But do they ever surprise you?
I thought about this today. I think Marigold surprised me the most close to the end. And I'm not going to give that away, but it's one of the, not the last chapter, but one of the later chapters when it came to me. And like it came to her too, like it took me 40 years to figure this out.
Yeah.
Or Marigold.
Yeah. Right.
Well, there's one character that's kind of minor, but she's so unique. We have one more moment to talk about a character. Okay. Would you tell us a little bit about Dewey?
Dewey is kind of a mystery woman, and she shows up at the Blue Hole, which is a natural, let's see, it's a well. Am I saying this right?
Artesian fed.
Well, and Mama takes the girls there one hot summer, and they're having car trouble at the old station wagon. And kind of a mysterious character named Dewey shows up in the parking lot. And I'll just say she's a helper.
Yeah. She's so unique. And, you know, when they first see her, they're not sure, because she's dressed kind of, the character's dressed kind of in men's clothing, and then she comes up and two of the girls are thinking about her, and then they whisper it to her. They do have some commandments that they try to follow, which is not unusual for this time period too, whether you were following Gene Autry or the Boy Scouts or whatever you might have as sort of commandments. Yeah, and they realize like, oh, we just broke two of our commandments.
Talking about her.
And then she's such a great character.
Thank you. To me, Dewey came as a gift. I found the name Dewey scribbled in my journal several times in my many journals. I don't really know quite where it came from or where Dewey came from, but when she came to me in that scene, I knew she was a gift.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were inspired by the Dewey Decimal System.
Oh, well, that would have worked. You know what? Sometimes I'm so close to the forest
I've heard
that I walked
a long
into
time.
A tree. There you go.
Where did it come
there.
From?
To the library. Oh, my gosh. Kathleen, we're going to take one last short break. And here's a word from another of our sponsors. And that, of course, is our business, Out West Shop. When we come back, we're going to find out where we can follow you and get your book. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Kathleen.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Ron and the Writer. We're talking with Kevin Rogers. You know, as we alluded to just before the break, where can we find you and what are you working on next?
Where do we get the book?
So the release date from University of New Mexico Press is October 21st. You can get, you know, at your favorite bookseller, whether if you go in person and it's not on the shelves yet, you can order it. You can find me online, my website. It's, you know, www.kathleenmrogers.com. And yes, my last name is R-O-D, G-E-R-S. And y'all are based in Albuquerque. I will be in Albuquerque October 16th at Bookworks.
Yeah. Yeah, We got it. Such a great venue. And of course, we always recommend when you can go and meet an author live. There's nothing like the magic of being with other readers and authors, if it's a panel of some kind or a single, like being with Kathleen. And you have somebody that we know that's going to kind of host you that night, I think.
You've had her on this show before. She's Albuquerque based. It's Sue Boggio.
Yeah.
Sue, if I pronounce your name right.
Yeah.
I've known Sue since 1998.
Yeah. And you met at a writer's conference, didn't you?
We met in 1998 in Albuquerque at Southwest Writers. And we stayed friends all these years. And her co-author, Mayor Pearl.
Yeah, we did the Hungry Shoes. They were on with us for the Hungry. Yeah, I remember that.
And you and Impress published that.
Yeah. But speaking of belonging to writers' organizations, you belong to a number of them. Is there something that you could say quickly as to why you would encourage an author to become part of a group?
Writing groups, big, small. Joining a writing group helps you. It's community. It helps you stay accountable, especially in a critique group. Writers, we're kind of cut from a different cloth, different. We come from a little bit different mold. We can pretend that we fit in, but deep inside, we're always outsiders looking in. You get a bunch of writers together and you can be as weird as you want.
Oh, my gosh. Let's see, Jim, you have a little bit of a quote, don't you? You, after looking at a whole lot, you picked this one.
Marigold is having a conversation with a fellow by the name of Sawyer. Sawyer takes a sip of coffee, his blue eyes searching mine over the rim of his mug. Since when have you been afraid of pushback? Write the story that's been holding you hostage since I've known you. Think about that recurring dream that wakes you at night. And she thinks, Marigold thinks, it's my job to sift through the silt, to form and shape stories like the sandcastles we build as kids. It's my job to set the record straight about what happened and why.
Oh, thank you, Jim.
Yeah. Again, that was from the Llano County Mermaid Club, special guest and longtime friend. We're so excited for her, Kathleen M. Rogers. You will be able to rewatch this show. It'll come up and replay immediately on Facebook streaming and on LA Talk Radio's YouTube channel. You'll also find it later, the audio of it, up on Podbean. And you'll want to, if you search, look for episode 153. And Kathleen, we're just so delighted that you were able to be with us tonight. It's so fun to have you.
Thank you. Can I give a shout out to my literary agent, Tracy Crow? You're awesome. And to the entire staff at University of New Mexico Press, you made my dream come true.
Very good.
Love it. Love it. And next week, we'll be joined with Richard Prosh, author and editor. And this next show was actually a great suggestion of his, so he's going to be along for the ride. We will be chatting with three guests. We'll have book illustrator Kyle Merriman, along with award-winning children's author Gina Prosh, and also award-winning author Phil Mills Jr. And we'll be talking about his book, The Story, How Billy Thomas Learned the Importance of Being Honest. And Gina's book is Love, It's Show and Tell. And they have both written a number of books. So it's going to be really, really fun, kind of talking about children's literature and children's illustration. So once more, Kathleen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's been great.
Thank you so much.
Final comment?
A final parting comment. We always say it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing.
And we'll keep reading.
We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
See you later. They